Hello, I'm Mark DeLuzio. Over the past century, our constitutional republic, grounded in the rule of law, has been transformed into a tyrannical democracy, orchestrated by unelected bureaucrats and globalists. The Constitution is now treated as a suggestion, not the law of the land. Welcome to the Constitution Solution, one podcast under God.
Hi, I'm Mark's co-host, Suzette Lawrence. Our intention is to explore the Constitution and discuss how our freedoms and constitutional rights are violated by those very politicians who took an oath on the Bible to uphold it. Learn how the Constitution is the solution to our country's problems. What do we need to do to restore our inalienable and enumerated rights? Class begins now.
Okay, welcome to episode 29, Constitution Solution, one podcast under God with Suzette Lawrence. And Suzette, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. And I'm really excited about the show today, Mark.
Why is that? I don't understand.
Well, we have the one and only Elsa Kirk on. And for those of you that are watching, you see her, of course, but for those that are just on audio, you'll hear her in a minute. So I'm really excited to have our very own Kamala impersonator on the show.
I would not be excited about that if that was true. But, I met Elsa virtually. I sent her an email a couple of weeks ago, and I said, geez, I really like what you're doing. Thank you for what you're doing and all that good stuff, and kind of introduced myself to her. And she was kind enough to write me back, and we just kind of start this virtual relationship, and we texted, then we got on a video call. And to come to find out, she grew up very close to where I grew up in some place in the Northeast, and it was really weird how that all worked. And we know a lot of the same restaurants. So when I come up there next time, we're going to go to whatever restaurant we want. But there's some good ones up there. I miss doing New England cooking. And Elsa, you have this. So basically, you got a lot of titles, right? You're an author. You wrote so many books that you need to talk to us about. How many have you written so far?
Over 20. It's over 20. Yeah. Might be 25. So I settle it over 20. So yeah.
You know, you've written a lot of books when you don't know the number, right? I wrote two. Yeah. Okay.
So I'm on my third. You know exactly how many. Yes.
It's really easy for me. I'm on my third. Okay. You're an actor. You're a podcast host. And I also see the word comedian on your, as a moniker as well. And you have done, of course, you became famous for this Kamala Harris impersonation. So we're not going to necessarily ask you to do that unless you want to. But you have some great conservative values, Christian values, which is phenomenal. You're a lifelong patriot. You are a police wife. You are married not only to a police professional, but he is also a Marine. I was going to say he was a Marine, but when you're a Marine,
you're always a Marine.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. So God bless him, and love to meet him someday.
Absolutely.
So your love for God, family, I'm reading off your bio here, country, mm-hmm. and you've turned that into energy in terms of your podcast and your show with your co-host, Clay Novak, who's also a Marine, correct?
Army Ranger.
Oh, he's Army. Yeah. Oh, he's Army. Okay. Does he get along with your husband?
Yes. Everybody gets along.
Okay. But the Elsa Kirk show, which I was on last week, and I had a lot of fun doing that. You did a great job. And so the Elsa Kirk show is a podcast, and that I think is on all the standard channels, YouTube, Rumble,
right.
Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all that good stuff, right? Like ours is. And you're also very involved in law enforcement and what we call LEO or LEOF, mm-hmm. Law Enforcement Officers, help me out with the F. It's the enforcement.
Families. Yep.
And you know,
law enforcement officer families. Yeah.
Families, you know, because that's one thing people don't realize with military and law enforcement, firefighters, that the family serves too. Right.
Yeah.
And so you're really big into that, which I really do appreciate. But tell us how all this started. Oh, by the way, you've got a new podcast coming out. It's just starting up. It's called Coming Out Christian. So you could talk to us about that. You do have a book out, one of your 20 some odd books is Welcome to the Family, which is the life behind the thin blue line. And that has to be an unbelievable book to read. And I haven't read it yet, but I will. So anyway, Elsa, let me stop talking. And why don't you start talking and tell us, how did all this start? How did it all start with you? And how did this all, you kind of took a lot of things and kind of, you know, pulled energy together to kind of do something that's making a difference. So
yeah. So, you know, the first thing that's probably obvious, Mark and Souza, is that I am never bored. I'm never bored. There's always something to do. And I just have this belief that, and I think it resonates with everybody, that life is so short. You should be, you know, doing all the things, and why just do one thing when you can do a whole bunch of them? And it all started with the books. The books were the very first thing that I did in, I guess you'd call it like the public specter, so to speak. And Mark knows this already, but I am and always have been and probably always will be a lifelong introvert. So all of this is so out of the range of expected behavior from me, you know, as far as like friends and family. They're used to it all now, but in the beginning they were shocked by all this. Like, wait a minute, you're doing all of this? Like, you like to be you, we call you the bubble girl. Like, you stay in your happy little bubble and you don't like to venture out of it, and here you are doing all these, you know, incredibly public things where you're really putting yourself out there. And, you know, so in a weird way, the books was the easiest to start with, because you get to hide behind, you know, your laptop and some books. And at least that's what I thought. You know, then I quickly realized that you can't just, you know, publish books, put them out on Amazon, and that's it, you know, and be done. You actually have to publicize and market and go to book signing events and meet people. And so that brought me out of my shell, of course, quite a bit. And you know, I my whole adult life, I don't know about as a kid because I was a little on the wild side, but my whole adult life has spent with this purpose-driven mentality. Like, you have to, we're here to serve a purpose. And my quest has, you know, always been to know what that purpose is, or figure out what that purpose is. And I was, you know, I raised two daughters, two adult daughters now, of course. I was a stay-at-home mom. So for me, that was my purpose, my sole purpose during that time of life. And it was the greatest thing ever. Loved every single second of it. But then those kids had the nerve to grow up, and I had to figure out, so who am I now? You know, what is my purpose now? What am I going to do? What impact can I make? And of course, the books started with the books. That was a goal and a dream that I wanted to accomplish. And as I started doing the book events, I was meeting all these people, and they would come up and they would say, and they'd have this like gleam in their eyes, like, and almost fearful in a way. And it wasn't about me. Like, I was all excited that I thought it was all about me. Like, oh, they're so excited to meet me. No. They wanted to talk about their own dreams of writing a book and their fears of all of the things that come with that, you know, the rejection, the criticism, the, you know, all of the things. And that became a passion to help aspiring authors realize their dreams, you know, so there's like another purpose. And it just kept evolving. And of course, as you mentioned, my husband's law enforcement career, I came into his life at a very tumultuous time during his police department. Was going through a lot of transition, a lot of big stuff. And of course, the world, our country was in tremendous, actually at that point, not so bad across the country. That came later. But then, you know, I kind of became an advocate and crusader for law enforcement, because, you know, they're basically fighting with their hands tied behind their backs. You know, they can't defend themselves publicly because they look like bullies. And, you know, and I realized that, and I know these people, and so many of us know these people. We know, you know, to use the cliche, but it's so true, the hearts behind the badges. We know them, and to hear them being, you know, just treated so horribly by the press and by politicians and by, you know, their own communities in a lot of cases, was not only heartbreaking, it was infuriating. And I'm a scrapper, you know, I like to fight, and I came out swinging, and you know what I came out swinging with was facts and truth and heart, of course. And I wanted, you know, the law enforcement community to know that you have a huge, massive support system despite what the world is telling you. And my husband coined it best. He said, you know what? He said, you're a crusader. Like, you need to have something to fight for all the time. And that kind of leads us to today that, you know, I love this country. I learned my love of country from immigrant grandparents and legal immigrant grandparents. Let me clarify. And
there you go.
Right. And man, oh man, that's really my foundation. So love of country, love of God came much later. That's a whole story for another day, probably. But yeah, you know, and this is where we're at in life, and we're gonna stand up for what we believe in, and you know, our country, man, our country right now is in desperate need of saving, really, and we can't be quiet about it. So that's my story, like in a nutshell.
I would like to have you back down the line about your Coming Out Christian podcast,
sure,
and what you just said about your love of God and how we both feel. You know, again, our podcast is called Constitution Solution, One Podcast Under God. The reason I think, and I'm a good problem solver all my life, I've learned from the Japanese and my studies over there how to solve problems. And I really am good at getting to the root cause. And to me, when I look at all the calamity, we could say it's globalism, it's communism, it's Marxism and all that. And it is. But I really think the one thing the communists want to do, and you and I talked about this a little bit the other day, is they take your God away. And
yes,
once they take your God away, that's it. The game's over. Okay. And there's an all out assault on our God. And you saw it at the Olympics. You had a good podcast episode on that the other day with Clay. Clay Novak, that was a very good, very good episode in terms of what you guys talked about. And you see it all over the place, right? Taking down crosses from mountains to honor
right.
our veterans, taking, and the whole, matter of fact, Suzette and I did a thing about church and state, and Thomas mm-hmm. Jefferson writing to Danbury, Connecticut's Baptist at the time. And we explained all of that as far as how that got misconstrued by a Supreme Court judge who was a, mm-hmm. was a KKK guy, okay, who hated Christians.
Oh.
Okay,
wow.
So and Catholics in particular. So this all-out assault, I'd love to have you back to talk about that and about your you know, your relationship with God and also the whole coming out Christian, to tie that all together. You know, the one thing I'll say to you, you know, so you said you're a scrapper, but you got to be very careful when you have an introverted scrapper. Watch out.
Yeah. Yes. Nothing is more dangerous than that, really, right? Because we don't even want to come out. Now you're making us come out, and now we got to fight you. Well, now we're doubly mad.
Oh my God. We have a lot of admiration for what you do. Okay. And, but when you think about that, you're an introvert and it's a struggle to get out there and do that. You're not hiding behind a computer. Well, you are in a way, but you're out there publicly,
yeah.
You're out there in the public, you're in the public eye and all this. And so, you know, it's even more admirable that it's against your kind of, in some sense, your DNA. You know, I'm an extrovert, so I don't care about it. I talk to anybody, but, but for you, it means that a lot more to me that you're passionate about what you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you, you very know? Much. I appreciate that very much.
Yeah.
We're at a point now, and you know, there used to be a time when I started becoming vocal on social media and putting it out there, what I think, supporting Trump, number one. And that the second you say that, especially that now it's a little bit different, still get the same amount of hate from certain groups of people, but there's so much more support. Back in the beginning, in his first run, that was not the case. You say, you know, people were losing their jobs for supporting Trump, you know, and and a lot of things were going on then. And I didn't care because I wasn't going to lose my job. You know, nobody's taking, this is mine. I own all of it, good, bad, ugly, indifferent. It's all mine. You're not taking anything from me. You can't cancel me. So I didn't care. You know what I mean? So I was putting those opinions and beliefs and truths actually out there. And I would get messages from people, you know, private messages, and they would say, "Hey, I just wanted to let you know, I totally agree with you. I believe the same thing, but I can't say anything because of my friends or my family or my job." And, you know, that's a big moment of pause when you hear somebody say that you cannot, in America, you cannot express your opinions for fear of retribution. Wow. And back then, I would say, "I understand. I get it. No problem. I'll be the voice. I don't care. It doesn't hurt me any." Now I feel very, very differently about that. If I were to get those messages today, I would, you know, very kindly say, "Thank you. But you need to stand for something here, and you need to be a part of this change and use your voice, because this is why we're at where we're at. This is why this is happening." Too many people sat quietly, too many people, you know, complicency, right? If you don't say something, you're complicit with it all. And if you're doing
That's
it out of,
absolutely. I'm with you on that, man. Yeah,
thank
you're
you.
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my answer would be very different today than it was, you know, a bunch of years ago, for sure.
Well, there's 6 million Jews right now that aren't here, or and their ancestors aren't here because they
Yes.
people in Germany remained silent. Okay.
Right.
They knew what was going on. Matter of fact, our
Yeah.
government remained silent. We knew what was going on. Okay.
Yeah.
And
Perfect
Suzette, why don't
example.
we Suzette, you and I talked about what reminds me of what Elsa is alluding to here is, remaining silent versus not. Why don't you just give us a quick snapshot on what you and I talked about in one of our episodes of the risks that the founding fathers took?
Oh. Well, they immediately, I mean, they all risk their lives, and their families and their all of their financial interests were immediately at risk, because King George wanted them each disemboweled. I mean, he didn't wasn't talking about just hanging them and killing them. He wanted them drawn and quartered, basically.
And that wasn't until their family, it happened to their family and children in front of them, then they're last. Yeah.
It's the tyrant always is reduced to violence. And when they want to take out a primary person, a big someone that attracts a lot of attention, and someone that people can follow, and there aren't many. I mean, there are just aren't that many leaders. You know, we learned from the science, the business science, that about, you know, 3 out of 100, maybe, you know, can convince like 100 people to do something. So that's a very small number. So I think the leadership, you know, going after the leadership, this is the other thing I think that's really important in terms of what you're talking about, with speaking up, speaking your voice, understanding. A lot of people don't take the time. And I'm not making excuses for them. I'm a news hound. So I'm always asking people, "Where do you get your news?" You know, because I want to see, am I missing something? And, you know, because there are some excellent independent news people. I don't get any corporate media unless the independent people that I listen to force me to listen to someone. You know, I'm happy to say I never heard the word salad between the president and the vice president. I didn't hear it until Glenn Greenwald made me listen, you know, and I was like, I'm writing in the comments.
I thought you were going to say until you met Elsa.
Oh, well, when I found Elsa, I couldn't believe it was real. Well, you know, I tagged you to her, and I said, I tagged you to that video, and I said, "Oh my gosh, you have to hear this." And he goes, "Oh, I've been following her for 2 years or something." You know, like,
Oh, I love it.
but But, you know, I think being having the power, the strength to like fully trust the information that you have, that's number one. Right. Because we don't want to, you know, you don't want to listen to somebody like at Fox News and then think you know, because that's right. The conservative channel, didn't you know? Mm-hmm. You know, so really being able to find the people that understand what's going on and have processed that and the impact that that's going to have on all of us, I think is very powerful. But at the same time, you almost have to be prepared to deprogram the general public because they've been brainwashed, yes. Which is why the Germans got away with what they're getting away with. You know, it's all brainwashing. You know, people have this idea. They think they're right. They're unwilling to investigate alternative perspectives. So these things happen, you know, where tens of thousands of people, millions of people are killed. Nobody kills more people than their own government.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. Yeah. Well, you know, Elsa and I talked about, we talked about this on her podcast last week, where we talked about, you know, being silenced. You know, I was silenced for 2 years on LinkedIn, and I've had thousands and thousands and thousands of followers. Because in my industry, I'm like a little rock star, okay? And
he's a globally. Big rock star. Well, that would be big rock star, not little.
I love it.
But the thing is, though, I've lost business because of my political beliefs, okay? Mm-hmm. And when I ran for Congress, they went back to 9 months to find something I posted, said it was misinformation, they canceled me. And it turned out that I was correct. And now they're having to let people back on. So I got their graces to be back on again. Literally a week ago, I got back on.
Wow.
And so, yeah, great. Yeah. And everybody's coming back, you know, and all this stuff. Yeah. But the thing is, though, I know what you're saying, Elsa, because I had people write to me. Mm-hmm. I can't really say this publicly because I'll lose my contracts with the state or with the city. Okay. And they're being silenced. And this is not what this country was supposed to be, you know? So right. I applaud you and Clay and all that for speaking out and saying the things you're saying, because, you know, and by the way, Susan, I get my news from Elsa's podcast. So that's what I do. So
just to let number you know, one news source right here.
Number one news source. No, you know, it's really but, a great, know, people like, should listen. Go ahead, Elsa.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's exactly like Suzette was saying, that, you know, you can't just trust one source. Like, you can't just, if you're a conservative, you can't just watch Fox News and believe that you have all of the information. And, you know, as painful as it is, yeah, you do have to watch and read what the other side is saying. And then, you know, you have to find those independent platforms and journalists and you have to weigh it all. You know, yes, it's work. It's challenging. It's frustrating. It's tiresome. It's all of the things, but it is so critically important to be informed. And, you know, and I said to Mark in our previous conversation, that I am in, and I love it. And I don't have any disappointment in this other than I wish I had it sooner. I'm in this constant game of like catch up and educating and learning. And your podcast is going to be such a huge help to me in that process, because, you know, I mentioned that I was a little bit of a slacker back in the day, in the high school days. And, you know, now I'm at a point in life where I truly, and of course I've been in this point for a while now, I'm old broad at this point. And high school was a very, very long time ago, but, you know, all of the things that I maybe could have learned then, or though maybe not, you know, public school system, I don't know so much anymore. But now it's like, yeah, I want all of the information. I want to know all of the things and understand them on a deeper level, so that when I do speak to people, when I do respond to the, and I hate using the sides things, but this is where we're at. So I'm just, you know, pardon the phraseology of it. But when the other side comes at me with their feelings and their emotions and their opinions, I want to be able to come back with hardcore facts and truths and corrections. And, you know, and the challenge always for us is to do it with kindness and compassion even when they're coming at you, you know, with their nastiness and vitriol and all of that. But yeah, I think it's important for us as, you know, number one, as Christians, and then number two, as, you know, conservatives, to come back at them with intelligence and grace. And that the second part is my personal biggest challenge, because I told you I'm a fighter. I want to come swinging. And yeah, so.
Well, you know, I used to, you know, I think, you know, the schools that my kids went to, in one of the high school that they went to is rated one of the highest, you know, in the state. And they, at least they think it is anyway. But I had a deprogram my kids every week. I had a deprogramming session. I would sit them down. What do you guys learn? No, that's not. No, Lincoln didn't have slaves. No, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And the right. stuff that they put in their heads. And this is a long time ago. Okay. Yeah. I mean, they graduated in 2000 and 2003 respectively. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is not today. Okay. This right. this was back then. And yeah. I look at some of the stuff that I got taught in school. We never learned that Stalin killed 100 million people. He was our ally in World War II. Okay, Stalin was an unbelievable tyrant, and not to minimize, as we said on your show, Hitler and what he did. Of course not. We're not right. going to minimize that, but we never learned about the atrocities, how he starved people, and mm-hmm. and how he just, you know, he was ruthless, and you know, so all those degrees I have on the wall back there, I think they probably represent 5% of what I've learned in my life. Mm. It's all self-learning, you know, it really is. Yeah. And I'm an intellect in that regard. I'm high on the intellect skills. I love to learn. And so does Suzette. And every time we do an episode on any aspect of the Constitution, okay, you know, Suzette and I will talk about it, and we think we know it pretty well. Then we got to right. dive into it. And it's like our knowledge of that particular, whether it's an amendment or whatever it is, expands tenfold. Mm. And then we find, and the things that, and the doors it opens for us to say, oh, now I got to go look into that. You know, Woody Wilson was a great one. Suzette did two episodes on him. We talked about him and how he was the father of the progressive movement. What is a progressive? You know, that sounds really like a neat name, right? I'm progressive.
Right.
I'm cutting edge. I'm above the fray.
Which is entirely,
yeah.
Yeah, that's entirely their use of words. That's their hallmark, right? Their use of words to make things sound better than what they are. That's the probably one of the most perfect examples right there. Progressive. What word, you know, they sat around going, what are we going to call this? What do we call it? You know?
Progressing. By the way, let's close the loop on progressive for a minute, Susan, before I let you go. Is a progressive is none other than somebody who has a disdain for our Constitution. And Woody Wilson was the father of that when he said the checks and balances of our government is a theory. No, it's not. It's the law. People say the Constitution's outdated. No, it's not a suggestion. It's the law. It's not a suggestion. Okay. Whether you like it or not, it doesn't matter. It's the
well,
law.
You have, exactly. Mark, you have to ask yourself, what are you progressing from?
No, you
what
don't.
Are you progressing away?
I just say, you don't like our country, and I'm not going to argue with you on it.
Well, no, but
what
you
I do is, in my mind, I do like, this. I eat a big red cross.
It's You're like, done. You know, Woodrow Wilson is like the really... the poster child for anti-American presidents. Right. I mean, he on the day he's inaugurated, he puts his hand on the Bible and he agrees to hold up. He swears an oath on the Bible to hold up the Constitution to protect us, the citizens, from the government, because governments are known actors for humans. If you're a human, your government is trying to either, as a rule, kill you or steal from you. And that is probably, there's not a better example of that than the young men in Ukraine who are hiding out so they are not thrown into a back of a van, given a week's worth of training, and sent to what they just most disgustingly call the meat grinder. Mm. Where 100,000 people, they believe, in the last 2 months have been killed or wounded in Ukraine because they're not
prepared. Well, you know, the words that, you know, we talk about words, right? Entitlements.
Mm-hmm.
You're not entitled to my money. Sorry.
Right.
Women's right to choose. Reproductive rights. You're killing something. How can it be reproductive? Right. Social yep. security. That's one of my favorites. They got the social part right because it is socialism. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Affordable Care Act. Really? Mm-hmm. And this, my all-time favorite is earned income credit, because if you don't work, you get a check from the government. It's earned income credit. Okay. So these ironic. Words, you're absolutely right. Let me ask you. So was there any point in time, Elsa, where it just like, hey, I got to do something? Or I know you said, okay, you raise your children. And by the way, stay-at-home mom, mm-hmm. unbelievably admirable that you did that. Okay.
Loved
I know
it.
People would look down on you to do that.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Right to my okay. face.
Oh, my yep. God.
That is.
God bless you.
I think that's horrible.
Yeah.
I'm a nurse and a nurse midwife by profession. I haven't worked as a midwife since my last delivery was in 98, April 12th, 1998. So it's been a while since I delivered a baby. But I just was totally clueless that anyone would take the attack on mothers seriously, like that there's something wrong with staying right. home and being married, having a family, and having your husband take care of the family, and mommy gets to stay home and be a mother and do probably the most important, what I would guess would be the most important work of her life.
Right.
I mean,
we all know, though, Suzette, we talked about it, the Marxist agenda, the attack on God, the attack on our mm-hmm. family, controlling education, graduated income taxes, we talked about on your show, all those tenets of Marxism. Yeah, there you go. The Communist Manifesto.
It's
all in there. The playbook's mm-hmm. in there. And the attack on mothers and on families is clear. It's not even a mystery to me why all this is going on. But, you know, so after you had your children and they kind of, you know, grew up, and as you said, mine grew up too, by the way. it happens. I don't know. I wish they were back, but as little kids. But, you know, did something like overnight just click on you, or did you have this burden of desire all along? Like, kind of, how did that all come to be?
You know, there wasn't a light bulb moment. I credit my husband really with so much of my emotional growth, intellectual growth, freedom to grow. This is a guy who, you know, one of my favorite early stories of my journey, my career journey, was a sitting over dinner one night and having one of those, you know, life conversations that you have when you had a couple of drinks and you're just talking about everything. And he asked the question, if there's, you know, something, you know, what haven't you done that you wish you had done or that you wish you could do? And at that point I had not written any books yet. And I said, well, you know, and I was embarrassed to say it because it was just, you know, so far out of the realm of things. I said, well, you know, I always wanted to write a book. I always wanted to be an author. You know, I thought I was going to be an author. And I remember to this day, he just leaned forward and he gave me, he's got this adorable little eyebrow thing he does. And he looked at me and he says, so do it, write a book, go for it. And, you know, it's the weirdest thing. You know, it's not that I needed his permission to write a book, but it was kind of this thing where you have somebody, you know, in your corner who is rooting for you and cheering you on and saying, you can do anything. You can do anything. And I'm the person in your life that's like right here beside you, giving you those wings to, you know, taking kind of the wraps off of your wings for you and saying,
he gave you encouragement, right? It really wasn't permission. Oh, yeah. I would guess it was encouragement. So
absolutely.
Okay, now that you said, okay, I'm going to do that. What was your first book and what was the thought process that went into what you were going to write about?
So I took the easiest route, what I considered the easiest route. It was like the baby route, basically. I wrote a children's book. It was just a simple, very, very simple, I think adorable little book called Look Outside Your Window. I'm a nature geek. I can spend all my days, all my time outside. I'd probably live in the woods if I could. And it was just this simple little book. And I thought that was going to be it. I'm like, oh, okay, I got it out of my system now. I'm good. I'm happy. And honestly, within like 2 weeks, I'm like, I have another idea for a book. And it just snowballed. And my poor
Really?
husband, it just,
Really?
it went like wildfire. And I spent about 7 years basically writing nonstop. And I went from children's book. I grew up with my books. I started writing children's books. And then I moved into young adult. And then I had for the longest time, well, the young adult book, that story, I had written fragments of it for probably 20 years. And I finally sat down and wrote the whole darn thing,
Really?
went through a lot of revisions. It was not good. It was not good. It simply wasn't. And I had the audacity to think that it was and publish it. It's since been revised. Love this story. Then I moved into like women's contemporary fiction. And yeah, I mean, it started just this wildfire that I certainly didn't see coming, and he didn't see coming, but he cheered it on the entire way. And and then as things evolved, of course, TikTok came along. We're kind of jumping chapters, but we have to because it's so crazy. TikTok came along, pandemic came along, and I decided to make like one video. It was like this really weird little evolution, and then another, and then another, and then I got addicted to creating content and getting more free with what I created, and really putting my opinions out there in the form of comedy sketches and all of that stuff, and things started taking off. And my husband, and of course, and all of that, part of that was being a very vocal law enforcement spouse. So a lot of those early skits are actually police wife stuff, like just comedic
Cool.
things that we experience as law enforcement wives. And a
Sure.
lot of that dealing with the public. And of course, that invites, we're talking about social media, you know what it's like on there. People will, say anything about anything and they don't think you're human. And got a lot of negativity, a lot of very hostile, rude, crude, vulgar, offensive, mean, threatening comments on those videos, just for people who don't like law enforcement and don't like anybody associated with it. And that was probably one of the greatest things that ever happened to me, because I very, very quickly learned, realized about myself that, man, oh man, do I have a thick skin. They did not faze me at all. And it actually was encouragement, like, oh, this makes you angry. This bothers you. Now I have to do more. Now I
Well,
have to do 10 more.
you know what though, so I'm friends with Paul Gosar, who's a congressman here in Arizona. He's actually one of the more conservative in Congress, and the Cheney organization is going after have gone after him, millions of dollars. They tried to split up his family, they turned his siblings against him. They did a good job at that, but they tried to break up his kids and his family and his wife, and that didn't happen. But I told Paul, I said, when they're coming after you like that, you know you're doing the right thing. Okay. And
Yes.
I said that to Sheriff Joe. I'm good friends with Sheriff Joe Arpaio, very good friends with him. And when they came after him over the birth certificate thing, which, by the way, if you ever see the evidence that he showed me, it's unquestionable that that birth certificate is a forgery. Okay. Now, it's not saying where he was born. He wasn't born here. He was born here. All it's saying is that the one he presented was a forgery. But I told him, I said, and Soros threw $2.5 million against his in 2016. $2.5 million against Sheriff Joe Arpaio with his opponent to get him out, okay? And that's the deep state that we talk about, right? And that's only the surface of the deep state. But so you're doing the right thing when they're coming after you, and that's how I kind of look at it too. And then people say, well, geez, I lost friends and I lost family. And well, were they really friends?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Were they really?
But
You know,
that's
because you have
it.
a different opinion. And
Right.
so
Right.
I don't know. I look at that. And the other thing I want to say about law enforcement, especially your husband, and Sheriff Joe taught me this. He said, Mark, if I was appointed, I'd never be able to do the things I was able to do because the pink shorts and the tent cities and all that stuff, right? He became famous for, and even the birth certificate, they would have told him to stand down. But he's elected, okay? He's an elected official, and he got elected for 24 years straight. If he was, he said, I wouldn't have lasted the first 2 years. I would have been fired, okay?
Right.
So the other difficulty that people don't understand about municipal, in particular, and state police and law enforcement is they work for somebody who controls their destiny from their career to their paycheck and everything else, right? And that could be lost overnight. And so not only are they facing the dangers and all the other things that we know law enforcement faces, the scrutiny, the public image and all that stuff, they're facing career termination because they are not elected. They've got somebody controlling the personal strings. That's another aspect of law enforcement that I don't think a lot of people think about.
Right. You're right. You're right. Absolutely true. Yeah. The, you know, the burden of expectation from the public is insane, really, too. And, you know, just to add another layer of the expectations of law enforcement, you know, they want them to be psychologists and, you know, they want them to wear many, many hats. And if they do what, you know, the public deems is wrong, even though it's actually right, that it's wrong because the public said so, you know, so you're convicted already, you know, in the court of public opinion, based off of oftentimes like a, you know, 6 second clip of an incident that went on for 15 minutes. You know what I mean? It's very selective.
I cannot believe how many F. Lee Bailey's we created, how many medical examiners we created based on watching the 10 second video, right? It's amazing. Everybody's an expert. Well, you know,
they're all experts. Yes.
Well, I tell you, and so when I was, you know, in grade school, you know, and I was a class clown. I know it's hard to believe, but and I would come home quite frequently with notes from the teacher. Okay, now here's a conversation, Elsa, that never happened in my household. My father never said to me, "Mark, tell me your side of the story." That never happened. Okay.
No.
My father was judge, jury, and executioner. Okay.
Yep.
Today, different game. And I think you know the school my wife taught at. She took a paper away from a kid that was cheating. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the father called up at night and said, "Hey, I understand you gave Johnny a zero. That was their policy." He goes, "Yeah, well, he's cheating." "Well, what's your proof?" "Well, I saw him do it." "Yeah, but you don't have proof. You just saw him. That's your word against his. Johnny doesn't lie." Well,
she's the teacher.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, she's the teacher. Yeah. And
she's
the
teacher. It doesn't matter what Johnny said.
Well,
of story.
He was arguing with her because Johnny, of course, doesn't lie and he doesn't cheat, right? So my wife finally said to him, "Don't you think it's time you stop being his attorney and start being his father?"
Ooh, right? Nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I love it.
She also told the class everybody's going to get a C. They all were up on socialism, right? All right, everybody's gonna, "I'm not going to get into Harvard. I'm not going to get into honor roll if I get a C. I can't get a C in this class, you know." And the other kids are like, "Yeah, C, great, because I'm going to work my ass off to get a D." Okay,
right.
And
lesson right there.
Everybody's going to get a C. Okay, and I mean, she didn't fall through with that, but she was just, you know, she told the class that. But the thing is, I remember the respect we have for teachers. I remember one time, it was in fifth or sixth grade, the teacher's door opened and we saw Mrs. Zimmerman eating a sandwich. And we talked about it for a week. We didn't think they ate. We thought they were, I'm serious. We thought that these teachers were superhuman. Okay. Did you see do you think she brushes her teeth? Does she go to the bathroom? That's how we revered these teachers back then. Okay.
Sure.
And not today, not today.
No,
and it's amazing. No. And a lot of that has to do with the upbringing. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. You know? Oh, absolutely. Oh, there's no question about it. You know, we're in a society that is raising children to believe that they are the center of the universe, that they are perfect just the way that they are, that they should get a participation award, You know, just you get rewarded for showing up, for doing what you are supposed to do. You get a reward for that. And, you know, I mean, really, like the biggest thing, though, is this whole mentality. Like, I it drives me nuts, this whole you're perfect, that just the way that you are. And, you know, believing that all the world's problems or all a child's problems or even a young adult is based because they have low self-esteem. No, BS, you have way too high self-esteem. Like, you think way too much of yourself. And, you know, and of course, the real root of everything is, as we all know, that the step and move away from God, really, in the homes, in school, everywhere.
That's the
God
issue.
Is not this right. He is not the central figure, and he should be. And, you know, and if anybody wants to dispute, you could dispute that all day long. But my only rebuttal to that is take a look around, take a look around, look at our country right now, look what's happening, and you're gonna tell me that taking God out of everything has nothing to do with it? I got a bridge to sell you. You know, got some swampland.
You know, I was in a huge supermarket with my wife one day, right? I think it was a Walmart supermarket. You know, it was one of the super duper ones. You know.
Oh yeah.
And I was, and it just hit me. Okay, I was walking through with her and pushing a carriage, and I go, Diane, stop. I said, look around. What do you see? She said, what are you talking about? You know, she's looking up in the sky, you know. And I said, no, no, look at what we have here. You want paper towels? Go to aisle mm-hmm. 7. They got 8 different brands. Meat? What do you want? Yeah. Cereal? The whole aisle full of cereal. Okay. This is what capitalism has done, that we decry capitalism. Okay.
Right.
This is what it's done. We at the you grab it off the shelf. You can now order it on your phone. Can you imagine how much we take for granted? And as you and I talked about, I've been to third world countries. I saw the squalor in this country, in this world, and we just don't know. To your point, Elsa, how good we have it here, and it's just unbelievable how ignorant we are in that regard. You know, so it's mind boggling to me, and I don't know. I just look at what we have and what the founders gave us and how we're squandering it for personal gain. That's what this is all about, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm so great. And I don't mean this to put down public school teachers. It's the system and some teachers, you know, I know, I believe with my whole heart, there are so many wonderful, amazing teachers out there. I was blessed to have some. I was also blessed to have some not so great teachers who gave me valuable life lessons as well.
Bingo.
Right. Yeah. You know, I mean, the bad ones, you know, in fact, the one of my worst teacher relationship experiences, actually, I credit her with my becoming involved or educated about politics, because she was a raging liberal Democrat. And I could care less at that age. Again, I'll remind you, I was a delinquent, did not care about world events, didn't care about anything but my social life, honestly.
You were normal. And,
yeah, totally normal, really. And her class, it was like a social studies class, and it was during the Bush-Dukakis election cycle. And she wanted everyone to say who, if they could vote, who would they vote for? And everyone who said Dukakis, she gave them a big thumbs up, literally clapped for them and said, good job, that's right, I'm so proud of you. So what did everybody do? They didn't care either any more than I did. And they're like, Dukakis, I guess, you know, big applause, you know, great grades you're going to get for that. The little rebel in me looked around like a bunch of lemmings. I even know that word at the time, but that's what I would call them now. I'm not going to say that, you know, I have to do the exact opposite of what everybody else is doing. And of course I said, oh, I would definitely vote for Bush. And she literally booed me. A grown adult booing a child, by the way, the absurdity. And made me dig my heels in deeper and start learning about the issues that were, you know, of the time. And I had some really great friends at the time where they're also delinquents, but very smart delinquents who knew, you know, and they taught me about Reagan and, you know, all of these things. And I'm like, okay, all right. And I was able to, you know, come back with some articulate, intelligent responses to her in class. She did not like that.
No, sure.
That,
sure.
That started the whole ball rolling for me. Like, that was the moment where I went, I'm a Republican. Okay, cool.
Well, you know, if you think about Jesus' disciples, they were all delinquents.
Okay. Yes, they were thieves.
They were criminals. But, you know, it's funny. I hear your story here, and I got to believe that's the hand of God working.
Yes, I agree. I agree. I look back on my life every day. At some point, I think about the path and the journey and the what seemed like missteps and mistakes and bad choices and all of those things, and including my being a bit of a delinquent in high school. I look at all of these things, and like you just said, like, that was the hand of God saying, you know, just literally nudging me out of the way and saying, no, 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 that's not for you. And
well,
I'm so grateful.
Your rebellious child in you at that time was meant to be, because,
yeah,
you know, when I asked the question early on, hey, what got you started on all this, right?
Mm-hmm.
That sounds to me like that might have been the watershed moment that you know, that really got you in a mindset. First, I'm going to prove him wrong. I don't give a damn what the answer is. I'm going to prove him wrong. But then you find out, hey,
yeah,
these answers make a lot of sense, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what's going on, right? And that's phenomenal. That's phenomenal. We all
Thank
have
you.
That, right? Somewhere along the line,
wonderful.
You know? And I don't know, we all have those moments in our lives that were like, you know, that really were markable. That, yes.
Yeah, it always is that we do live our lives in moments, don't we? Where something happens and you snap out of it.
Yeah.
That reality is one of the reasons that I rarely engage the opposition. And the reason is because they've been brainwashed.
Yeah.
And when you've been brainwashed, being deprogramming someone is a real art. And you don't necessarily want to be around the person. I call it getting red-pilled, right? Mm-hmm. I got red-pilled in 98.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very difficult 3 years. Very difficult. I was a very, very angry woman. Everything I had done up until that point was because I thought things were a certain way. And then I realized, you know, things were not that way at all. You know, that there was a smoke screen, which I got to see. And then there was the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you start see, when you realize that, like, I remember thinking, like, I friends of mine that, like, during the whole, what I'll call the mess, what we just went through in 2020 and 21 and 22 with the mandates and all of that, I remember thinking how absolutely terrifying it was to have starlets come on TV and online and start giving medical advice, that nobody really got that. Like, you're not allowed to do that. Doctors give medical advice, like, and preferably practicing physicians that have experience in that area.
What about when congressmen have actors come in who played a role of some, you know, professional testify in front of Congress? Well, why aren't we having the actual person come in? You know, it's like,
what? No, I don't. What?
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I missed this story. What happened?
Oh, no, they've had actors in front. Like, for example, Brockovich, they had, what's her name that played as the actress? They had all these actresses and actors that came in as spokespeople for whatever cause their movie was about. Okay. As
wow.
If they're the experts. Okay. And it's mind boggling how that works. Right. And,
right.
You know, people would ask me when I ran for Congress, Mark, should we get vaccinated? I go, why the hell are you asking a politician to get medical advice? My initials are MD. Okay. But that's about it. Okay. I'm not gonna, I have my view on the vaccination. Okay. And if you want to know, I didn't get vaccinated, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't. I want you to make right. that decision. But what I will fight for is the government not making that decision for you. And yes. I will fight for the fact that an employer can't discriminate against you just like they can against race or anything else. That's I'm going to fight for. Okay. And the government has no right in telling you. I drove around Arizona here and it drove me nuts. Big billboards that would say, have you gotten vaccinated today? These are government billboards, right? Have you gotten vaccinated today? Call 1-800, you know. And the government's telling people to get vaccinated. It's like, what the hell's wrong with this? You know, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Well, there's a lot wrong. If you think government schools are bad, government medicine is deadly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. Well, I've done
it
a lot
really
of work
is.
With the
VA. It kills a lot of people.
Yes, they have.
There's a woman that had a really cool, her name is Catherine Austin Fitz, one of my heroes, and she has a really cool website called Solari, Solari.com. And you can go to Solari.com. And she was actually the HUD person for what I call King George the First, Bush One. You know, so there's
By the
King
way,
George
another,
the First,
another,
and then
another unconstitutional agency. But I digress.
So there's King George the First, and then there's George the Lesser. That's how I refer to
him. That's pretty funny.
And so Catherine Austin Fitz had this really cool affidavit that you could print off of her website. And there was one for students. There was one for, you know, employees that they could take to their employer. And it basically said, I don't want to take this shot, but if you're going to make me take the shot to keep my job or to stay in school, then I need you to sign this, because if something happens to me, it's the estimates for my lifelong care are around $5 million. So you need to take, if you're willing to take, if you trust this enough that you're willing to tell me to do it, then you need to take personal responsibility for taking care of me. Not the school system, but you personally. This is going to be on you. People took those in, and everybody got a pass. It wasn't well publicized. This wasn't something that was,
that's cool. Just
the guy is confronted with it in that moment, or the woman, and she's looking at it and she's reading it and she's maybe getting a clue, starting to wonder, like, who's going to take care of her? Because a lot of these people.
We didn't push back enough like that, Suzette. You know, that's the kind of thing that we didn't do. We allowed these executive orders, which are not law, to take effect, you know? Well, I have a question for you. So we all know that the Kamala Harris impressions that you do. And by the way, I saw you donning a new wig now.
Yes. Oh,
the
my
Kamala
gosh.
Wig. Oh, my God.
It's so good. It's
yeah.
so
good,
Elsa.
But how did Kamala come along? What happened with that? Like, how did that start? I mean, were you just sitting there at breakfast one day and you said, hey, I think I'm going to do Kamala? Or how did that all kind of, what's the origin of that?
You know, I tell you what, I can't pinpoint the exact moment or instance where it happened. What I do remember is I had made, quite a few videos at that point before it started regarding Kamala and her ineptitude, essentially, and her, idiocy, namely, the biggest one, I think my first mega viral video was the one with her with the electric car. And she's like plugging it in and holding the plug in. And she's saying stupid things like, and there's no fumes, and it's like beyond absurd. And the video is basically me making fun of her, it's like the back and forth. And I think it was in that video that somebody had commented, you kind of sound like her. I bet you could imitate her. I'd love to see that. And I remember reading it, whether it was that video, maybe it was a different one. I'm honestly not sure, but I saw that comment somewhere and I went, okay, I'll give it a try. Now, personally, I think my earliest ones that you like, I really cringe. Like, I want to take them down so bad, but I'm not going to do it. I'm going to keep them up there because I think they are really awful. It's evolved quite a bit. But yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of like how it started. And then those videos were doing really well. And I saw it as an opportunity to use, use these word salads, use these absurdities to point out how unqualified she is for this job and how useless she is in her role. I mean, she does nothing. And I thought to myself, well, I love comedy. I literally only watch educational and comedy things and read. It's either funny or educational, nothing in between, nothing scary, nothing, no suspense, nothing. So I'm like, well, comedy seems to be my lane. It's at the very least my happy place. So if I can use comedy to drive these points across to people who maybe otherwise wouldn't want to hear it, if I come at you in that newsy kind of way and say, so here are the things that Kamala did or is doing, and you have to, blow up. People are like, yeah, whatever. People, obviously, that I'm talking about who are fans of hers or supporters of hers. But if I make you laugh, it might also make you think a little bit. So that's been like the goal and the hope with
Well,
it
I
that
think
that
that's a
can
really
happen.
nice approach because I think, a lot of times just mocking the obvious and pointing humor at it does serve a purpose in that regard. And it kind of keeps you a little bit, above the fray. But to me, good comedy, and I love comedy too, and I'm going to ask you next who your favorite comedians are, but good comedy, the best comedy, in my opinion, is comedy that's baked in some semblance of truth. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I mean
Yeah, absolutely.
that really is like George Carlin was a master at it,
Right.
and I didn't always agree with some of his social stances. Oh, we got
Sure.
Suzette back. There you are.
There she is.
We lost
I'm
you for a
back.
minute, but George Car no, we were just talking about comedy and how
Yeah, I was
comedy is.
listening.
Oh, you were okay. We lost you there for a minute. So I just want to read something I got from a fortune cookie. This is a real live, well, live fortune cookie. Okay. And I saved it. I'll send it to you. The only thing we know for sure about future developments is that they will develop.
Are
Okay.
you
So
sure Kamala didn't write that?
I think Kamala
I think
worked for a
she
fortune
did.
co cookie
I think
company
she did.
before she became. Yeah.
I think
When we
that's
get her out of
exciting.
office,
That's going to be her next career when we get her out of office,
I
right?
would
That
say
she's going
that
to write fortune cookies.
we got Chinese takeout, and I opened this up and I said, Diane, you're not gonna believe this. You're not gonna believe this. L listen to this. I said, and I read it. This is a Kamala fortune cookie,
Yeah.
And but I was gonna ask you, who are your favorite comedians? Who do you follow?
Gosh, that's a really excellent question. So I do this. I don't know if it's a weird thing. I'm sure other people in my lane do the same thing. And I did this also as an author. I try not to watch or read things that are in my lane because I'm so worried about being influenced by them and basically stealing other people's content.
Oh,
You know what I
cool.
mean? Or style. So I don't watch a lot of other comics, people who do what I do are humorous. Somebody actually put it nicely. A friend reached out, somebody who's now a friend. He's a comedian. He's an actual comedian, a real one. Does stage comedy and everything. Tom Mabe, you got to go check him out. He's a great guy. But he reached out and he says, are you a comic? Like, do you do comedy? Do you stand up? I said, oh gosh, no. I do things out of my house, that's basically it, or my car sometimes. And I said, I don't think that I'm a comedian. He says, oh, you're a humorist. You're a humorist. Like, you're a satirist. That's like what you do. That's your lane. I'm like, okay, yes, that's how I will describe myself going forth. What's his name? Nate Ergatz. Now, how do you pronounce his last name? There's a guy, he's really terrific. See, I mean, that's how bad I am. I don't even know their names, and I love their comedy. But yeah, they're kind of ish in my lane, just so much better. They're amazing. Yeah,
No,
there's a lot of good
don't
ones out
knock
there.
yourself down. Well, my favorite comedian right now is Sebastian Maniscalco, and believe it or not, going to see him next week, and he's coming to Phoenix. So,
so
Diane bought me tickets for our 44th anniversary. She bought me tickets because she knows we saw him in Vegas once, and we were sitting in the front row. And I said, she said, you don't want to sit in the front row. And I said, nah, he doesn't pick on. I got all his videos. He doesn't pick on anybody, right? Sure enough, he picked on us. Yeah. Oh, look at the look at the two senior citizens. They're all dressed up. What do you thought? You're going to see Frankie? Did you get comped? He says, you know. Then he started talking to us about, you know, who spends more money? We point to each other. One of the big, you know, the big screens. People are cracking up, you know. He was so, he was really good. But
that's awesome.
I like his, because he does the same thing. He has a lot of human, you know, real life humor, you know. But
My favorite skit of his is where he talks about everybody getting quiet and hiding when someone rings the doorbell.
Oh, that's phenomenal. That's phenomenal.
Like, yeah. That's so relatable.
Well, it tells you how times have changed, though, right? I mean, when the phone would ring, everybody runs to the phone. I was like, oh, damn, the phone's ringing, you know.
His mother would bring out, he gets into the whole thing about how his mother would bring out the Entenmanns.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, for company. And make them, like, he used to, like, welcome company in.
Oh, he's phenomenal. He's phenomenal. Now, let me ask you, would you ever do stand-up?
Yes, to be able to check it off the bucket list, and mainly because the idea terrifies me. So that means that if the opportunity came up, that I would say yes before I had time to think about it. So yeah, I would do it just to get it done.
So that's on your bucket list.
I think it kind of
cool.
is.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, I think so.
Do you know who Kevin Jackson is? I don't know if you know who Kevin Jackson is. He's a friend of mine. He was on Fox News for the longest time on Hannity. He would come. He's a comedian. He does politically incorrect humor, and he got kicked off of Hannity because he tweeted that the woman who was going after Judge Kavanaugh was a skank. And then Fox News kicked him off, and he couldn't, you know, Facebook canceled him. But he lives here, and he's a friend of mine. Matter of fact, I'm going to try to get him on the show. You'd like Kevin. Kevin's pretty cool. But what else?
I'll tell you what my kind of like stage type dream would be. You know, so if anybody's listening to me, what I would want to do, I would want to do like a kind of like almost like a podcast crossed with a talk show type stage thing. You know what I mean? Like, I'd love to have like guests come up and we can just kind of go back and forth and just have fun with the stuff and things. Like, that would be my ideal setting.
But you wouldn't want it scripted then, right? Would you want it just like kind of free fall type thing?
Yeah. Or, I mean, yeah, maybe. Yeah. I'm receptive. Let's put it that way. Whatever he has planned for me, that's what I'll do.
You know, there's a lot of famous performers like Steely Dan, what's his name? Remember his name now, but Hagen. Yeah. He was so stage fright. They didn't perform for 20 years.
Wow.
They just did albums. You know, there are a lot of famous performers who are stage fright that do perform, but they're absolutely stage fright to getting on stage, you know? But they do it, so it's interesting being an introvert and just having stage fright. Maybe that ties into it. I don't know, but
yeah, it probably does. I mean, you kind of, you know, when I do my stuff, you really are, you're almost, it's you, but it's also a persona. It's like both. You know, you just go into a totally different mindset. You know, the at home Elsa and the on screen Elsa are exactly the same and also entirely different. And I know that makes no sense whatsoever, but right. It's just a thing, a switch. And I've heard this from other performers, actors, entertainers, you know, people in this lane. They all kind of say the same thing. Like, there's this switch that flips and it's just different. Yeah. It's very hard to explain.
Yeah. Well, you know, comedy, all the jokes I tell, Suzette knows I tell a lot of jokes. They're not mine. Well, I heard them somewhere else, right? Except for I did make up one joke, to my credit. I made up one. And
are
I have
sure?
a goal. I think I told you, maybe I did or didn't. I have a goal to make one stranger laugh a day. Okay. Mm-hmm. Drives my wife nuts, right? when we're out in the mall somewhere and I'll make somebody laugh. But that's my goal. I want to make somebody, especially people who have public, public facing jobs. They get crapped on all the time. The only time people talk to them is when something goes wrong. And so here's my joke. I get on an airline and I'll say to the flight attendant, by the way, do you hear all the American airline flight attendants calling sick today? No, what happened? They had cabin fever.
That's such a dad joke, right?
Such a corny,
like
but it makes them laugh. I made that up. That's the only joke I ever made up.
I think that was a very good joke. I love dad jokes. I love like silly, goofy humor like that. I love that. I think it's great.
Comedy.
Well, I'm a king of dad jokes. Just ask my grandkids. So
comedy is a direct link to intelligence. There are no dumb, funny people.
Well, like me, it's an exception.
All the funny people are smart. And if they try to be funny and they're not funny, they're obviously not smart.
Well,
and
you
there are
that,
people
that
aren't that. Funny that think they're funny. But in general,
you're right.
The funny people are always the smartest people. That's why I'm always attracted to comedy.
Look at George Carlin.
In 60 seconds with the word salad than you ever could be trying to attack her.
Right.
You're just like kind of bringing it up like this is because everybody is like impersonates presidents.
Right.
Senators, you know, people that are out there, but very few people can do it in a way that makes you slow down and follow every word. And then you realize, my gosh, the vice president actually said that.
Yeah.
It's not like you're making up the stuff she's saying, right? You're saying what she's saying. And it's like, my God, she really said the only thing we know for sure about future developments is that they will develop, you know? She didn't write that. That's my fortune cookie. But you start listening to this stuff and you say to yourself, what? Does she have nothing meaningful to say? I mean, it can't be that hard.
She doesn't have.
I think she's hiding who she is.
Yes, I agree. She speaks very differently now. Right?
She plays it really stupid because she's a communist. Right. And if she's too herself, it's going to be too evident. The kinds of plans that she has made for us are nothing that anyone is looking forward to.
Right.
And now this running mate, I mean, this governor of Minnesota. Oh,
this guy is actually evil. Yeah.
I mean, these are people that are actually funding the grooming of children.
Right.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, though, you just said a very important word, evil. Evil.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe that with my entire heart that there is absolute evil running these people. What I just saw from this Tim Walz with his abortion rulings or legislation is anyone with a conscience, with a soul, I don't care. You don't have to be a Christian. You don't have to even believe in God for this to know that what he has legislated in his state is horrific. It's literal, actual murder, you know, in everybody's.
It is murder. When I got asked that question on the campaign trail, they said, what do you think about abortion? I said, it's murder. I mean, I can't put any more, you know, graphic words, but if he signed a bill though, that said, hey, it's okay to kill your puppies.
Right.
People would
lose their minds.
Ape crap, right? And it's okay. You'll get fined $250,000 in California if you kill a turtle egg, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Where's our values here, right? And you're not really see. I think the globalist movement, especially with climate change, has painted human beings as scourges on this earth. We're not part of nature, they say. We expel CO2, which they claim is a poison. Without CO2, we would die. I go back to my biology class and think that, well, geez, we can't get oxygen without CO2. That's photosynthesis, right? That's how that gets produced. And but now they said, hey, the stuff that you breathe is a poison. And so you're walking around, Suzette, as a poison. And you also have all kinds of other waste associated with you. You're just a a stain on this earth. Okay. Now the people are saying that do the same thing. Okay. But you talk about killing a puppy, forget it, man. You'll right. have people marching up Capitol Hill with signs yeah. and everything else, right? Kill a baby, no big deal, right?
No big deal.
I think
no
the climate change.
Because, you know, it's women's reproductive health, guys. Come on.
Oh, yeah,
well,
right.
Think of that
yeah.
governor. Yeah, wasn't right. it the governor of North Dakota or South Dakota who actually did kill her dog? She had a...
Yes.
Well, that was Christine, I don't know where her brains yeah. are to put that in the book, but anyway.
Well, I know, yeah. I know. Very unpopular, but she makes a point that every rancher and every farmer has had to make.
But look there at the outrage on that. Look at the that's
I know,
my
but,
point.
But exactly. That's why I'm yeah. bringing it up. Because yeah. they mm-hmm. came after her like she was, you know, the devil.
Oh, yeah, the outrage for that, you know.
Because she put down a dog. Right. But if she had come out and said, I've had three abortions,
they would applaud her. They would applaud
they
her.
They would have
right?
said, see? Yeah. Yeah. And now she yeah. got to be governor. Right. You know, she couldn't have done that if she had all those kids.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
I mean, it's kind of, it's interesting. To your
Ronald mind. Reagan said, it's interesting. He said how everybody
Top
who was
of mind.
Abortion, everybody who was for abortion has already been born.
Oh. Yeah. How about
that's
that?
Good point.
That
yeah.
Interesting?
Good
point. Yeah. So, right. but
Elsa, can I ask you a question?
Of course.
So this year, like since Christmas time, mm-hmm. what do you think for you, like the top, like two, three things that have happened in your life that have just been mm-hmm. extraordinary?
She met us.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Well, you guys, number one.
She met us.
Number one.
That's the end of the answer right there. Okay. I don't know what to tell you, Suzette.
Come that's on. It. There's nothing else.
I know.
Oh my
We're
goodness.
The top.
Yeah. So, boy, that, you know, so that's the easiest. I'll have to go back a little bit further than December, because they would be excluding one of the greatest things if I don't go back a little bit. So three of the greatest things that have come into my universe within a very, very, very short period of time is three spectacular, beautiful, amazing grandbabies. My younger daughter blessed us with three babies in basically within 3 years. She had one right after the other. So yeah, so we have a three-year-old, just about, she's almost three, three-year-old, 1.5-year-old, and 4-month-old grandbabies. That is the light of our lives right now. And they're
Isn't
in Florida,
great?
So right. Oh,
grandkids,
it's so amazing.
I tell people, you don't know if they're first time grandparents, and like, you're not going to even, you think you know what this is going to be like until the baby's born. And you trust me,
oh my gosh,
it will be
yeah.
totally different than what you think. Right.
Yeah.
In a good way. But mm-hmm. so that was your daughter-in-law, right? No, your
daughter.
Oh, your daughter.
Daughter.
I'm sorry, your daughter.
Daughter.
You have two
I have two girls. Yep. Right, I have two grown girls.
And Suzette, she had to file for government regulations because it's now considered a factory down there. So three babies and
yes.
Okay. It's
yes,
an actual factory now. So she got EPA
right?
on her and
yeah.
all kinds of stuff.
They claim that they're done. But yeah.
The best thing that American families can do is have babies. So
yes,
kudos.
Absolutely.
To your
yes.
Also.
So, that's so great. Wonderful. That is such a tremendous blessing. My Christian faith is, you know, relatively new. I mean, it's actually, I, you know, you asked me a specific question. Of course, here I am stepping outside the parameters. But my Christian faith, it's only approximately 2 years old. So, you know, so I'm still a baby Christian, and I love the growth and the journey of that and the transformation in my life, which, you know, I always say, people always ask, you know, like, what's your testimony? What's your story? And, you know, we're so used to hearing the rock bottoms, you know, that people were saved, you know, they were at the bottom and they were saved and their life turned around on a dime. And those are such miraculous, beautiful, powerful stories that I always thought my story was like, well, mine's boring. Life was great. Everything was good. Happy as can be, no, you know, real problems outside of normal things that everybody experiences in life. Mm-hmm. And I simply came to the realization that God has been calling my name for my entire life and just patiently waiting for me to come to him. And he has put so many things in my path. He has blessed me with so much. And And, you know, when you get that understanding that you did nothing to deserve it, like there's nothing that I've done that makes more worthy than another person to have these blessings. So what do you do with that knowledge? You simply say thank you, and you decide who to thank, and you realize, well, it's not me. You know, it's someone higher, greater, better, and bigger than me. And yeah, so that has been tremendously life-changing. 1, 2, 3. Yeah, I don't know. I gave you like 4, I guess. The 3 grandbabies.
Well, you know, I would almost think that he has been preparing you.
Yeah, I
you
agree.
Know, mm-hmm. It wasn't like he just showed up 2 years ago, right? I'm sure you don't think that either.
Yeah, he's been here all along.
That experience about being rebellious, all that teacher, that one watershed moment, all the other things I'm sure that you didn't talk about has been preparing you. And I think we're all being prepared for, you know, greater things. We're all here to grow. We're all here to help other people grow. That's why Suzette and I do this podcast, because we just think we owe it to somebody out there to learn what they're not being taught. You know, I didn't really learn this stuff in school. Most of this is all self-taught. And, you know, the Constitution is 4,500 words plus long. I mean, it's not long at all. And it's easy to read, but then once you get into the details, it's incredible. It's an incredible, credible document. But, and a form of government is off the charts brilliant, and people don't realize that. They want to dissolve it, get rid of the Electoral College. They want to, you know, they want to abolish, they want majority rule. They want a republic. They want a democracy. And they don't even know. I argued with history teachers about this, that they're the same. Okay. I swear to God, history teachers right up in your neck of the woods would argue with me that a republic and a democracy are the same thing. That's one of the cornerstones of our government. So, but God bless you. You know, we need to have you back on. And if you're willing to come on,
of course,
I'd love to talk more about your other podcast or anything else you want to talk about.
I love it. I love it. I want to shut up more and listen to you guys more, because you guys are both such an incredible wealth of information. And, you know, it's for everything you just said, Mark, and you, Suzette, you know, both of you, the things that you have a knowledge base on are, like you said, the things that are not being taught. And they are,
right.
It is so critical and crucial to know these things and to understand them. And I love how you have put two things together that belong together, the Constitution and God. And, you know, it's just incredible what you're doing. So I thank you guys. And of course, I'll come back.
Okay. Yay. And, you know, as you listen to these episodes, you let me know what you listen to. And then Suzette and I will have a quiz, and we'll grade you. And if you get out of hand, we'll kick you out of class. no, only kidding. But yeah, please
kick her out. I'm going too.
Yeah.
If you kick her out,
stick together.
I wouldn't even allow you in, Suzette. You're just a big troublemaker. Okay.
Well, I'll get in. Yeah, you won't be able to kick me out.
Are you guys okay with my sharing episodes over to social media? Can I share episodes and stuff? Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Oh, please.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
We
and
would
by the
love
way,
that.
I can send you the MP4 file because Scott's going to get it up. It will be published on, where are we, Suzette? The 15th.
We could do it on the, August 15th.
Yeah, it's going to be out on the 15th next week. We do 2 a month. We might pick that up once we get a little bit backlog. But we do 2 a month, so you'll be up next on the 15th. I think we just did Federal Reserve too, didn't we?
Yes.
So, okay, so that's out already. And you'll be up pretty soon, next week. And
so
if there's
fun.
Any
and
clips
awesome.
In there,
I mean, like your other episodes too, like your all your other stuff. I want to share like more stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to make sure it's okay.
Oh,
okay,
my
good.
God, sure.
Thank you.
Well,
our
you know
YouTube
what I'll do?
Channel.
I'll invite you to the Dropbox file.
Oh, awesome.
And you'll
get
all the episodes. Everyone's in a folder, and then you'll be able to also pick up the documents that we use and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, no problem at all.
Oh, yeah.
We'll coordinate. Cool. My people
so
call your people.
Yeah, I love it. I love
That's
it.
An Italian
I wish
thing.
I had a team of people. Don't you wish you had a team of people?
I'm the people.
The things? I'm the people.
Elsa Kirk, you are amazing. Thank you so much for coming on. and for sharing the humorous side to this VP, which has been, that's how I know you, you know, as just, you're just very funny, very good at doing her. And it's a real lesson because you can't make that kind of stuff up.
By the way, she's not the only one
not to kill that comment. I know people a lot. You can't.
She's not the only one that did her. Okay, I just want to say that. So sorry, I couldn't let that one go. I'm sorry. Anyway, yeah. Thanks, Elsa. I really appreciate it, and we definitely got to have you back. And I also got some people I want to talk to you about. Maybe you can come on your show. So
I love it.
So we'll do that. And let me stop recording and we'll see you. This was episode, what did I say it was? 29. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to The Constitution Solution, one podcast under God, where we hold that strict adherence to the Constitution is the solution to most of our country's problems.
You can find other episodes on our website at 1787solution.com, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and most other platforms. We're your hosts, Mark DeLuzio and Suzette Lawrence. Until next time, may God bless you and may God bless America.